Blog Talk Radio.
For radio as godless as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
We're concentrating on the looming threat of Christian nationalism.
First, we'll preview the new documentary, God and Country, produced by Rob Reiner.
Then we'll hear lots of scary clips by public officials recently espousing Christian nationalism.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. The carnage in Gaza has left more than 30,000 dead, and the violence needs to stop immediately, UN Rights Chief Volker Türk told the Human Rights Council on Thursday. The development came amid unconfirmed reports from the enclave's health ministry on Thursday morning that more than 100 Palestinians had been killed during an incident in Gaza City involving the Israeli military, while waiting for aid trucks to arrive. The appeal from the High Commissioner for Human Rights came after almost 5 months of constant Israeli bombardment and mass displacement in the enclave, prompted by Hamas-led terror attacks.
The war in Gaza must end. Clear violations of international human rights and humanitarian laws, including war crimes and possibly other crimes under international law, have been committed by all parties. It is time, well past time, for peace, investigation, and accountability.
The UN rights chief underscored the unprecedented level of killing and maiming of civilians in the enclave and noted that at least 17,000 children have now been orphaned or separated from their families. Antonio Guterres expressed his strong commitment to the people of Sudan on Thursday as the UN assistance mission based there comes to an end in line with a Security Council resolution ending its mandate. In a statement, the UN Secretary-General extended his deep appreciation to all international and national personnel of the United Nations Transition Assistance Mission in Sudan, UNITAMS. The United Nations is not leaving Sudan, the UN chief insisted, as he noted that heavy fighting continues throughout the country and risks sparking a regional crisis. The UN remains strongly committed to providing life-saving humanitarian assistance and supporting the Sudanese people in their aspirations for a peaceful and secure future, the UN chief stressed. In a call to Sudan's warring parties to lay down their weapons, Mr. Guterres urged them to commit to broad-based peace talks and a transition to civilian-led democratic government. High-level UN-partnered mediation efforts towards a peaceful future for Sudan have already begun, led by the Secretary-General's personal envoy for Sudan, Ramtane Lamamra, to Nairobi, where the UN Environment Assembly is galvanizing global action to tackle climate change, biodiversity and nature loss, and pollution. The week-long meeting is the world's highest-level decision-making body for environment matters. In support of its work, UN Secretary-General Antonio Guterres led the call for urgent, concrete and sustainable measures to prevent our climate from imploding. And with poisoned rivers and rising seas just two of the major threats facing our world, Mr. Guterres insisted that humanity is to blame, and yet those least responsible suffer most. Echoing that message, Inga Andersen, head of the UN Environment Programme, or UNEP, appealed to delegates attending the meeting in Nairobi to create space for the climate to stabilize, for nature to recover, and for pollution to recede, providing the basis for economies and societies to flourish sustainably. She said that the international community had already shown that it can work together on many significant environmental safeguards. These include global agreements to protect the ozone layer, many endangered species, and huge areas of land and sea. Ms. Andersen also applauded how the international community had agreed to slow the rate of climate change and raised the profile of action to combat desertification and land degradation. She noted that billions of people depended on the UN Environment Assembly to succeed. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Welcome to Radio for the Rest of Us. I'm Dan Barker. Annie Laurie is not here today. She's doing a debate right now, as I'm recording this show, about is religion a force for good for NPR's Subject to Debate. And when that show is available, we'll tell you how you can listen to it or watch it. Annie Laurie Gaylor and I, are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and this is the February 29th, 2024 episode. Tori Niels with Audio for the Arts is our engineer in the Stephen Uhl Friendly Atheist Studio in Freethought Hall, the national office of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin. Freethought Radio is the weekly production of FFRF. We have two purposes. The first is to keep state and church separate, and we do that with a lot of legal letters and legal activities, sometimes litigation. And our other purpose is to educate the public about the views of non-theists. Our members, more than 40,000 members, call themselves atheists or agnostics or secular humanists or skeptics or whatever. We don't care what we call ourselves. And we're a membership group, and we invite you to join us as well. You can find out more about our organization at ffrf.org. By the way, today is Leap Day, February 29th. Leap year happens almost every 4 years, except on the centuries that are not divisible by four. I did a debate in Seattle on February 29th, 2000, which was a leap year century that was divisible by four. Can you keep track of all that? Why is our calendar so clunky? A real evidence for the existence of an intelligent designer would be if the Earth orbited the Sun in exactly, unwaveringly, 360 days, 12 months of 30 days, and if it never varied or needed to be adjusted. The fact that today is Leap Day is one evidence that counts against the existence of an intelligent designer. We sometimes hear that the only truly loving marriages and relationships are religious or Christian marriages. Without God, life is shallow and meaningless, we hear. But is that true? Are atheist and agnostic couples less loving? Today, in the second half of the show, I'm going to talk with Enrico Gnaulati. He's the author of the book, Flourishing Love, A Secular Guide to Lasting Intimate Relationships. Gnaulati is a clinical psychologist, professor of psychology, and an expert in mental health policy. We also have a weekly video, TV show, that's on Facebook Live. It's called Ask an Atheist. And the topic this week was Evangelicals Against Trump. FFRF State Policy Manager Ryan Dudley and FFRF Director of Governmental Affairs Mark Dan spoke with Rob Ryers. He's an evangelical pastor. He's a political organizer with Vote Common Good. He explained how some in the evangelical community can be persuaded away from Christian nationalism and Trump, and about his own personal journey rejecting Christian nationalism. You can watch that show on FFRF's YouTube channel by looking for the Ask an Atheist playlist. A new episode airs almost every Wednesday at 12 noon Central on Facebook Live on FFRF's Facebook page, where you can ask questions during the live show. The show reruns at 7 p.m. Central the same day. On the legal front, FFRF is urging Washington County Public Schools in Virginia to remove a display with a prayer on it from the High Point Elementary School cafeteria. It reads, Lord, we thank you for this food. Bless it to the nourishment of our bodies and us to your service. Amen. We also learned that the Bible verses were on display in the main office of the school last year. We are urging the district to remove any and all religious displays immediately to protect the students' First Amendment rights. Attorney Chris Lyne wrote, courts have continually held that public school districts may not display religious messages in public schools. Religion is a divisive force in our public schools, and that display needlessly alienates the students and the families who are non-Christians or who are non-theists. So we're asking the district to respect the constitutional rights and remove that prayer immediately. Also over in California, FFRF is urging a member of the Capistrano, California Unified School District Board of Trustees to stop using her school board position to promote her personal religious views while disparaging others. At a recent board meeting, Lisa Davis urged the district to deny access to school facilities to groups that are not aligned with her Christian values. She implied that members of the Satanic Temple, which are asking you to set up an after-school club, are comparable to Nazis, Hitler, the Proud Boys, Antifa, and the KKK.
Make no mistake, the Satanistic group is a hate group organized with a specific purpose to mock and demon Christian beliefs. They could very easily rebrand as an open-minded group, scientific group, or even an atheist group. Choosing to brand themselves as a satanic group serves only to express hate. While we respect everyone's right to believe whatever they may and worship whatever they like, the nature of this group forces this body to understand the limits of its policy. Why is this okay and not a Nazi group? I'm not aware of specific precedent that would stop us from denying a Satan club, if indeed that is where the board decides to go.
Davis also used her position to organize a prayer walk at an elementary school to promote her personal religious beliefs and to take action against the after-school Satan club. So Chris Lyne wrote a letter to that board saying, board members are free to promote their personal religious beliefs, but as government officials, they can't abuse their position to promote their personal beliefs to denigrate members of minority religions or of non-religions. So we're asking the school board to refrain from discussing religious beliefs, their own personal beliefs, during the meetings. And if it allows any other nonprofit group to host a club, it must allow all nonprofits, including the after-school Satan Club. So Annie Laurie can't be here today, but I can read part of a recent article that she wrote on our FFRF Action Fund site called Welcome to the End of Democracy. And since this is radio, I can play some of the remarks that she quoted in the article. At the Conservative Political Action Conference, CPAC, last week in Maryland, the conspiracy theorist Jack Prosobiec said this.
All right, welcome. Welcome. I just wanted to say welcome to the end of democracy. We're here to overthrow it completely. We didn't get all the way there on January 6th, but we will endeavor to get rid of it and replace it with this right here.
Amen.
That's right, because all glory is not to government, all glory to God.
Welcome to the end of democracy. That was Steve Bannon behind him laughing, and he was heard saying, all right, amen. Prosobiec belatedly claimed that those remarks were meant to be satirical. But as the report by the Freedom From Religion Foundation and the Baptist Joint Committee for Religious Liberty on the January 6th attack documented, Christian nationalism was the commonality that united the insurrections. After we burn that swamp to the ground, Prosobiec continued, we will establish the new American Republic on its ashes, and our first order of business will be righteous retribution for those who betrayed America. He called on the CPAC attendees to fight and support each and every J6er. He got a standing ovation for that. A few days later, Donald Trump also addressed the CPAC, but his address before the national religious broadcasters last Friday is where he made his strongest Christian nationalist pledges. He didn't openly talk about overthrowing democracy, but he didn't have to. Project 2025 is set in place to do so. The project's mandate for leadership states that freedom is defined by God, not man. And the think tank is busily crafting a list of top priorities for Trump, and Christian nationalism is one of the bullet points. Other bullet points include invoking the Insurrection Act on his first day to quash protests. So while Trump is leaving the details of his next supposed administration to a bunch of these Christian nationalist groups, he was very eager to outline how he's towing the line in his speech to the religious broadcasters with many Christian nationalist comments. Plus, many digressions complimenting himself and bewailing his persecutions and the big hoax. Doing his own imitation of a martyr Jesus, he even told the crowd, I've been indicted for you.
And I really believe it's the biggest thing missing from this country. We have to bring back our religion. We have to bring back Christianity in this country. Because I'm being indicted for you. And never forget, our enemies want to take away my freedom, because I will never let them take away your freedom. And I'm never going to let it happen.
I'm being indicted for you is something of a messianic message. I wonder if Trump really wants to compare himself to Jesus. Should we be expecting a crucifixion? Among his many pandering remarks, he said, in God we trust will never change.
In God we trust, we will never change that motto. There are many, many people that want to change that model. That model will never change.
Well, he's talking about us, actually. In the 1990s, FFRF did sue to remove the motto, but our suit was thrown out. Do you know why? The court told us we couldn't even sue over the motto because it's not a religious phrase. And yet, Trump just showed that it is indeed a religious phrase. And of course, the cross of Jesus is a popular image to that audience.
No one will be touching the cross of Christ under the Trump administration. I swear to you, that will never happen. Never happen.
And of course, he couldn't talk to an evangelical audience without mentioning the sin, or the toxic poison, as he called it, of gender ideology.
We'll also take historic action to defeat the toxic poison of gender ideology and restore the timeless truth that God created two genders, male and female.
He also said, remember, every communist regime throughout history has tried to stamp out the churches, and in America, the radical left is trying to do both. There weren't many Catholics in that evangelical audience, but for some reason, Trump claims that Catholics are being especially targeted.
They're weaponizing law enforcement to target parents, conservatives, and Catholics. Catholics. They have gone after Catholics. That's probably why we don't have any of this audience. There are none left. No, but how Catholics? I mean, they're being persecuted. But evangelicals, and they're all on the list.
He claimed abortions are occurring after birth. He referred to the J6 hostages. He said, you're going to believe in God because God is here and God is watching, and God probably can't believe what he's seeing. He said, I will protect the content that is pro-God. Ironically, he did say something that was true. The greatest threat is not from the outside of our country. I really believe it's from within. It's the people from within our country that are more dangerous than the people outside. In fact, we can say amen to that. Well, Annie Laurie takes that back. She said he made a second correct observation. He said, what a difference a president makes. By the way, I'm just making those comments under our C4 organization, and we're tracking it as a C4 activity here. The FFRF Action Fund has a Theocrat of the Week and a Secularist of the Week, and this week's Theocrat is Michigan State Representative Josh Shriver. Jack Posobiec, whom we just mentioned earlier, believes in the great replacement theory that whites will be replaced by dark-skinned people, and he tweeted a meme of the world showing the threatened white people cowering in Europe and North America being crowded out by advancing dark people. Michigan State Representative Josh Shriver is under fire for sharing that great replacement tweet from Jack Posobiec. So naturally, Shriver appeared on Posobiec's show to play the victim and to double down on his Christian nationalist beliefs, saying, God called me to represent him in government.
God called me to represent him in government. The separation of church and state is to keep the state from infringing upon the church. The church has every freedom. It's necessary for us to respond to God's call, get engaged. We need to be representing God in government. Otherwise, there will be a God void that will inevitably be filled with godless individuals that will create a godless nation where there will be death and destruction.
That comment generated a lot of backlash. And in fact, Shriver was stripped of his committee assignments and office staff budget and publicly denounced by Michigan House Speaker Joe Tate and Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. He'll still be permitted to vote on legislation. The secularist of the week is U.S. Representative Jason Crow, representing Colorado's 6th District in Congress, who has spoken about his intent to make real change happen in response to gun violence. In an interview on MSNBC, he responded to the shooting that happened in Kansas City after the Super Bowl.
This is a uniquely American problem. And my heart breaks, my thoughts and my prayers go out to the families and the victims here. But listen, I'm a member of Congress. I'm a legislator. Right? I'm not a member of the clergy, and my job is not to just send thoughts and prayers. My job is to legislate and to try to solve problems, and that's why I've been pushing very hard to try to solve it, and that's why people should be pushing their members of Congress and others to join with us to do the same.
He's a former Army Ranger. He has a long history of advocating for gun control, and he made this issue a major part of his campaign before taking office. We want to thank Crow for pointing out the empty thoughts and prayers that are offered to victims of gun violence instead of effective legislative action. So after the break, we're going to hear some music preparing us for the psychologist and author Enrico Naolatti, who will tell us how secular marriages and relationships are having truly flourishing love. I'm Dan Barker. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
Garofalo, are you tired of right-wing politicians who desperately want to impose their religious beliefs on the rest of us? I know I am. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Join the fight and call the Freedom From Religion Foundation toll-free at 1-800-335-4021. That's 1-800-335-4021. Or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation website at ffrf.org. That's www.ffrf.org. Proud to be an atheist, Janine Garofalo.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker. On our TV show, Free Thought Matters, this week we speak with Ryan Cragen, professor of sociology at the University of Tampa. We talk about his book, Beyond Doubt, The Secularization of Society. Annie Laurie asked him why he thinks the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, the people with no religion, why is that group growing so fast to the point that today almost a third of American adults are non-religious?
The argument that we make both in Beyond Doubt, and I have another book coming out with Jesse Smith in October that looks at people leaving religion specifically in the U.S. So we talk very much about this very issue. The argument we make is that it's, broadly speaking, modernization. So modern ways of thinking that actually lead people out of religion. But I can give some really concrete examples. The one that I usually give with my students that I think works fairly well is I ask my students, okay, how many of you know how an internal combustion engine works? And I might get one student out of a class of 30 who's like, oh, I worked on a car with my dad. I have a sense of what's going on here. But the vast majority are like, I have no idea how an internal combustion engine works. And I said, okay, but if it breaks down, how many of you are going to call a priest to come fix your car and just like pray over it and then anoint it with oil or holy water? And they're like, well, that's ridiculous. And I said, and that is modern ways of thinking. You don't think that cars work on magic. Very few people fully understand how a cell phone allows you to communicate with somebody on the other side of the planet in real time, but no one thinks that it's pixie dust or fairies or anything like that. We know that somebody knows how it works, and that's all modern ways of thinking, and those modern ways of thinking are really what are challenging religion. There are a bunch of other things that we go into as well, but I think that's like the general argument of secularization.
That's Professor of Sociology Ryan Cragen. You can watch that episode right now on the Free Thought Matters playlist on FFRF's YouTube channel. And if you live in Chicago, Los Angeles, New York City, San Francisco, Washington, D.C., where Free Thought Matters is broadcast on local TV, you can see the show every Sunday morning.
and Sunday evening here in Madison, Wisconsin. For stations and times, check ffrf.org/freethoughtmatters. In a few minutes, we're going to talk about the book Flourishing Love. A couple of weeks ago on Valentine's show, we played a love song called It's Only Natural that has the line, "You will always be my natural selection." Well, I made a Spanish language version of that song called Es Solo Natural.
Es solo natural que yo te quiera. Es solo natural que tú me quieras a mí. No es gran misterio si nos amamos. Simplemente así evolucionamos. Me muevo a tu lado por instinto. Qué fuerza tan sutil que me atrae a mí. No puedo ignorar ese milagro material. Por siempre tú serás mi selección natural.
That's the song, Es Solo Natural, It's Only Natural. After the break, the psychologist Enrico Naladi will tell us about Flourishing Love, a secular guide to lasting intimate relationships. I'm Dan Barker. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace.
Let's restore respect for America's secular roots. Help the Freedom From Religion Foundation defend the wall of separation between state and church. Join us at ffrf.org. Freedom depends on freethinkers.
Margaret Sanger's motto was, no gods, no masters. This is Free Thought Radio.
This is Free Thought Radio, and I'm Dan Barker. And unfortunately, my co-host, Annie Laurie Gaylor, who's also my wife, she can't be with us today because she is right now in the middle of taping a subject to debate show, which is a debate about is religion good for society, something like that. And that's going to air on NPR radio. And they also make a video podcast of it too. So when that's available, we'll tell you listeners how you can watch that show. So we're going to be talking about love now. And so Annie Laurie says, I wish I could be with you, but I send my love. Our guest today is Enrico Gnaulati. And his last name is spelled G-N-A-U-L-A-T-I, Gnaulati, an Italian word. He is a clinical psychologist with more than 30 years providing psychotherapy to adults, couples, teens, children, and families, as well as psychoeducation testing services. He's written for many publications such as The Atlantic, Salon, The Huffington Post. He's a nationally recognized reformer of mental health practice and policies. He's published numerous academic and popular articles in many magazines. He's the author of many books, including Saving Talk Therapy, How Health Insurers, Big Pharma, and Slanted Science Are Ruining Good Mental Health Care, and the book Back to Normal, Why Ordinary Childhood Behavior is Mistaken for ADHD, Bipolar Disorder, and Autism Spectrum Disorder. And he is in private practice in Pasadena, California. Enrico Gnaulati's newest book is especially relevant to the many godless listeners of this show. The book is called Flourishing Love, A Secular Guide to Lasting Intimate Relationships, published by Karnak Books. So Enrico Gnaulati, welcome to the show.
I'm thrilled to be a part of this, Dan.
Am I saying your name correctly enough?
You are indeed.
Took a little bit of practice. So what a great book. I'm looking at the cover now, Flourishing Love, A Secular Guide to Lasting Intimate Relationships. I know from my past as an evangelical pastor, and even just today, there are dozens or hundreds of books out there for religious marriages or for Christian marriages. But is this one of the first or the first book of its kind for secular marriages?
To the best of my knowledge, it is. And that's actually one of the primary reasons that I wrote the book, Dan, is that I was starting to get miffed, realizing that the religious right is of the opinion that they have a monopoly on a pro-marriage approach. And I actually, and they often will say that secular values are the ruination of marriage, and that secular values are the reason why we have what pundits call a marriage panic right now, or retreat from marriage. And I actually wanted to flip the script. And in my book, one of the overriding arguments that I make is essentially that secular values are actually not the ruination of marriage, but actually marriage is salvation. And so I kind of unpack that in the book. What I mean by that.
If you can borrow a religious word there.
Yes, I slipped that in.
So when I was a preacher, I'm ashamed to admit my shady past, but when I was an evangelical preacher, I used to preach that non-religious people lead these shallow, meaningless lives. In your opinion, do non-religious people have less loving relationships?
Oh, I would actually counter that and say, Dan, that non-religious people who prioritize sort of secular love ethics, and I can talk about what I mean by that, actually are uniquely positioned to have flourishing marriages over time, not just satisfactory marriages, but flourishing marriages. And I would say that people of faith kind of ceiling out in terms of having satisfactory marriages, but not flourishing ones. And I'm happy to take that position.
And by marriage, you're also including relationships, people who,
of course,
you know, who live together, who maybe don't want to get married, but they have a lifelong relationship, right?
There you go, a committed long-term partnership of any sort. Yeah.
So there's that old joke. You know what the secret is to a long-lasting marriage?
Oh, please. Is it going to have religious connotations?
Nope. The secret to a long-lasting marriage is don't get divorced. But
you know, actually, there's great wisdom in that. I think because what you know, a focus in my book on flourishing love is to like normalize the agonies and the ecstasies of marriage, and that if you, and this is certainly true in my own marriage, I've been married for over 30 years, that hanging in during the rough patches, if there's a foundation there to that marriage out of the gate, that especially during the child-rearing years for those couples that have children and can survive domesticity, that's actually the title of one of my chapters, yeah. That sticking it in over the long haul and committing to be bringing your most loving self to the partnership over time, actually for many couples, that seemingly potentially broken marriage can turn into a flourishing one over time.
So your book says that in many cases, religion can actually harm a relationship. How is that?
Well, okay. There's, you know, I actually believe that there's a great deal of hypocrisy and wrongheadedness on the religious right, saying that they are the champions of marriage. If you look at the data, the divorce rates are highest in the Bible Belt states these days, and even pornography viewing is higher. So. You've got a situation, I think, where people like kind of MAGA Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House, would say that, you know, yeah, marriage is in decline and the solution is to double down on Christian love ethics. I would say that actually, more often than not, dooms a marriage, weakens, not strengthen marriages, and dooms them from the start. And if you kind of bear me out here for a minute, part of it is the overemphasis on purity culture, no sex before marriage, getting lots of then young couples get married in order to have sex. They make premature marriage commitments, not really, you know, because sex is seen in faith communities as sort of optional rather than mandatory, not essential and a sexual aspect of what it means to be human. So think about it. When you choose a marriage partner and you hold off till you get married in order to have sex, there's no real informed consent occurring there, an informed decision there, because you haven't really experienced whether or not you're sexually compatible. So you've got this purity culture thing, the valorization of virginity, people marrying at younger ages, frowning upon contraceptives, seeing abortion as an abomination, family planning takes a hit, children are brought into the world at younger ages, there's more traditional division of labor, we know that non-egalitarian marriages are more likely to end up in divorce, you've got women exiting the workforce in order to kind of embody more traditional divisions of labor in the home. They're exiting from higher education, which can result in less family wealth over time, all of which really loads, freights that marriage dangerously so, and sets it up not to flourish, as those in the religious right would say, but to actually to flounder, I would say.
I was just going to say, maybe one of the reasons that atheists have a lower divorce rate than born again Christians is that they hold off getting married, and if their relationship is going to fail, it fails before it becomes a marriage statistic.
There you go. Yep. Yeah. I mean, there are other secular values I think that atheists are more likely to have in a marriage that are more favorable to that marriage surviving, and I can talk about that if you want.
Your book makes a distinction between a moral commitment and a personal commitment. What do you mean by that?
Well, moral commitment is, you know, you took a vow that day you were married, and it's a sacred vow, and that you're kind of accountable to a divine presence first and foremost, and whether or not you treat your partner lovingly or not, that has a divine implications. Versus a personal commitment, you're really accountable first and foremost to your flesh and blood mate, treating them well and being treated well by them in return. There's no divine surveillance whereby you feel accountable to do right by your partner in the eyes of God. You want to do right by your partner because you're choosing to do right by your partner because you have a human connection, and that your joint happiness needs are important. Versus a moral commitment, you're looking really at prioritizing what they would call holiness over happiness. Holiness being making sacrifices, doubling down on joyless joint sacrifices as a way to kind of make you maybe morally superior, such that then that God that looks down favorably on you because of that, and that somehow you derive some abstract satisfaction from that, rather than concrete direct satisfaction from bringing your most loving self to a marriage, and there being an awareness of reciprocity, that giving and getting love are inextricably linked. That away with this notion of agape love, unconditional love that you can selflessly give and not expect in return. I would argue, and I do in my book, that true love always is a balancing out of giving and receiving love, and the mutuality of that and the reciprocity of it.
We're talking with Enrico Gnaolatti. He's the author of the book Flourishing Love, A Secular Guide to Lasting Intimate Relationships. And when we come back, Enrico, I want to ask you, what is happiness? And maybe you can explain what you mean by having an equity mindset in marriages. I'm Dan Barker. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
Hi, I'm Julia Sweeney, and I'm an atheist and former Catholic. I even wrote a play about it called Letting Go of God. Right now, Catholic bishops are using their considerable influence to deny women contraceptive rights. Please join the Freedom From Religion Foundation and help keep church and state separate. You can call 1-800-335-4021, that's 1-800-335-4021, or visit ffrf.org to stand up for true religious freedom.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Dan Barker. And sadly, Annie Laurie is not with us because she's doing a debate for NPR right now, but she'll be back with us next week. And I'm continuing my conversation with Enrico Gnaolatti. He's the author of the book Flourishing Love, A Secular Guide to Lasting Intimate Relationships. And if you want to look him up, his last name is spelled Gnaulati. And we're talking about the flourishing love in secular marriages and relationships. And Enrico, you talk about an equity mindset as being very valuable in a flourishing marriage. What do you mean by that?
Well, I'd also call it a fairness habit of mind. And it really, to put it, define it technically, it's sort of the balancing out of benefits received and burdens suffered in a marriage. So the balancing out of benefits received and burdens suffered in a marriage. I mean, people like to say that keeping score in a marriage is a horrible thing. I would say yes and no. I think most people who are in flourishing marriages have gotten really good at just being attentive to kind of this, the calculus of giving and getting, not where you're kind of resentfully keeping score, but that you're lovingly wanting to be fair. Reciprocity. You treat me well, I treat you well back. And so that sort of mindset. I'm not you strive to not hurt me unnecessarily. Of course I'm going to strive back to not hurt you necessarily. So that reciprocal nature of giving and getting, many times when couples do keep score, it's because they've lost that balance. And sometimes the resentment can actually be a good thing. It can signal them that, hey, we need to take a look at the arrangement that we have. I feel like I'm overgiving and undergetting. It's okay, I think, in a marriage to be able to talk that way. Of course, it's verboten in a Christian marriage because you're supposed to give selflessly, just like Christ, gave the ultimate sacrifice, his own life.
Or like the woman is supposed to be subservient to the man in many of those religions.
There you go. So now a fairness habit of mind would be a basic acceptance of equity and egalitarianism. What's good for me is good for you. You give what you get what you give, and just sort of, be mindful and intentional along those lines.
You talk about happiness in the book, and you write that happiness is connected to the balanced exchange of giving and getting love. Is that a definition of happiness, do you think?
I think it is. I think that when you listen to happy couples, they've really got that down. They've mastered that. And by love, I mean, I'm not talking about highfalutin, big ticket loving gestures. In my book, I talk a lot about love at the granular level. One of my favorite quotes is by the French philosopher Simone Weil, and it goes something like, attention is the rarest and purest form of generosity. So I like to talk about love in terms of attentiveness, the demonstration of genuine curiosity. I look at kind of conversational narcissism and getting away from that and truly listening, truly paying attention, truly engaging each other's minds. I think that's one form of love. And, I do not back down. There's a chapter around sex. There's a chapter in my book called Lust is a Must. And I think that the sex negativity that is the legacy of Christianity has really gotten in the way of modern love these days, and what most couples, who certainly those who are transsecular, want to prioritize in their life in terms of sex positivity, especially women. Normal sex in Christian circles is really sex for procreation, preferably in a missionary position, and that's that. I joke in my book that the missionary position is the missing it position for women. There's good research that shows that only about 4% of women can achieve orgasm through penile thrusting alone in the missionary position. So not good for women, all of this sex negativity. So happiness means trending in the direction of sex positivity, really seeing sexual expression as an essential aspect of what it means to be human, not some kind of animalistic, devilish inclination that needs to be eradicated. So, that's another element of how I define happiness. So at the granular level, the showing and receiving of sex, physical affection, true attentiveness, humor. I have a whole chapter on humor and the importance of humor in a healthy marriage. Conflict resolution is really a part of trying to engage each other's mutual happiness needs. Moving from flight or fight mode to tend and befriend mode. The true apologies, true forgiveness. These are all things that Christian culture has co-opted. Like true forgiveness really is all about doing, apologizing, acknowledging wrongdoing, forgiving your flesh and blood partner, mate. not forgiving based on some kind of moral prescription in order to rectify where you stand with God.
And
there's
another thing
that's absurd about that.
Another thing that the Christian culture ignores is LGBTQ love. It's not just
yes.
male and female, made he them. In your book, you have a section that tells us that we can learn a lot from LGBTQ relationships. What can they teach us?
Well, of course, there's the sexual dimensions of that, you know, what people call kink, which is essentially spicing up a sex life, and that, you know, sex is for pleasure and bonding reasons, not just procreative reasons necessarily. So you've got the sexual dimension there. The LGBT community has a lot to teach us about. The big one, though, actually happens to be for me the notion that it takes a village to raise children. For those in the gay and lesbian community that end up having children, there's a lot of research that shows that gay and lesbian couples really look beyond the family in order to kind of build family from a place of choice, and basically not get bogged down just within their own family network to raise children, but that are more apt to take their responsibility seriously, that we're raising children, it takes a village to prepare them to be citizens of the world, to be able to be out there in the world, relating to people from diverse backgrounds, to be masterful in doing that. And that in order to do that, oftentimes you need to expose them to a wider range of adult figures, not just those in your immediate family. So that is, I think, something that definitely the LGBT community has to teach us.
Thank you for being with me today, Enrico Niaolati. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
It's been a privilege, Dan. Thank you so much.
The book is called Flourishing Love, A Secular Guide to Lasting Intimate Relationships by Enrico Niaolati. If you're a member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, thank you. If not, we invite you to join us or ask for more information at ffrf.org, or you can call 1-800-335-4021, supporting not only this show, but our vital legal work. Check us out at ffrf.org. And we want to give greetings to listeners in Philadelphia, to WOOM, in Bryn Mawr, to WZML, in Madison, Wisconsin, to WIDE and WMUU, in Janesville, Wisconsin, WADR, College Station, Texas, KEOS, San Marcos, Texas, KZSM, KOPN in Columbia, Missouri, KOPW, KEPW in Eugene, Oregon, WOOL in Bellis Falls, Vermont, WRIU in Kingston, Rhode Island, and WRFI in Ithaca and Watkins Glen. So we ask you to tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope someday